Hello everyone, my name is Kate Decker and I am obsessed with exposing the truth of what happens when we ditch the autopilot, take our power back, and become the creators of our destiny. And I'm here to remind you that no matter who you are, where you come from, or what you've been through, you deserve to live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the Create Your Best Life Radio.
Hi guys, welcome back to the podcast. So today we have on Katie Rogers, and Katie is an ex-lawyer, now turned business owner and certified life coach and breathwork facilitator. And honestly, I'm so excited that I got to chat with her, and we were talking all about ditching the good girl syndrome. And her area of genius really is that she's guiding her clients through her signature stages, past to present coaching containers that are founded upon education, healing, and integration work to cultivate a lasting and impactful transformation. But the thing that we focused on was ditching the good girl syndrome. And I feel like so many of us can relate. It's so ingrained in us. Like, oh, it's ridiculous. And obviously with me having a daughter, I am very, very aware of this. And, you know, I like want her to be a good girl, but I don't want her to be this kind of good girl. So let's dive into this episode. I hope you love it. Share your thoughts with me. She also shared like so many tangible tips and like what can you do if this is something that you struggle with, if you struggle with people pleasing and stuff like that. So yeah, without further ado, let's dive into the episode. Hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I am so excited because I have another incredible guest with me here, Katie Rogers. And it's so fun because we have, you know, Kate and Katie. So we're going to totally rock this podcast, and I literally cannot wait. So welcome, 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 Katie. How are you?
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me here, Kate. Doing really well. I've moved city this week, so it's a lot of change, a lot of exciting things happening. And yeah, I'm riding on the buzz of all of that.
Oh, I love moving. I'm probably weird, but it works with me being a military spouse, because I feel like every time we move, we get to create a whole new me, like whole new us, because there is new environments. We don't fall into old habits. So I love moving.
That's so interesting that you say, actually, and that ties in a lot to the good girl conditioning too. I also moved around a lot growing up. I was in a different school every year almost. So yeah, we have some things in common there.
I love it. Okay, so let's dive right in. So first of all, you're an ex-lawyer and now you have your own coaching business. And a big theme that we are bringing today on the podcast is, you know, the good girl conditioning. But can you please tell us, how did you go from being a lawyer to doing something like completely different?
Absolutely. And those two, just they sound so worlds apart, really, when you have them on paper. And it absolutely ties into my own experience of the good girl conditioning. And I think a lot of people who go down the route of becoming a lawyer will resonate hard with how that can really feed into the good girl conditioning. You have something, you know, you have to record all of your hours. Great, I can show how productivity I'm doing. I can measure my output. Look how good I am. You know, you do a career and you get a degree that's like, you know, respectable and shows a high level of academic competence, which again, you know, if my good girls are listening, you probably are excelling hard at school, you're overachieving in your careers. And this is, you know, exactly the kind of career route that you could take you down. But yes, in my journey as a lawyer, that was off the back of not my own authenticity and choices, but how can I impress my parents? How can I source more love? How can I show that I'm worthy? And I went down into the legal route for all the wrong reasons, really. And of course, when you're doing something to keep driving and keep fueling that fire of what do I need to do to get this love or attention or prove my worth, there's never going to be anything that's like, okay, now I've ticked that box, because you can't get it internally first. So I found that in that job, I ended up really burning myself out, chasing things, doing things, and getting to a point where I thought, who am I suffering for? Because I wasn't enjoying it. I wasn't enjoying even the environment that I was working in. I didn't find the work interesting. The hours were absolutely killer. And the salary was not. I think people have this idea that lawyers are making big money, and that's not necessarily the case, particularly at the level that I was at and at the kind of firm that I was at. I thought, who am I suffering for? I felt like I was living somebody else's life. And that led me into a lot of soul searching questions that totally changed my life and then brought me around into coaching, which I absolutely adore.
That's so funny that you say that, or maybe not funny, but one of the things that I love to say is whenever I am making decision myself, or even my husband, who he is in the military, whenever he's making any career decisions, I always say, you know, one day everyone is going to be dead. Like all of us, we're going to be dead. So who do you want to live your life for? For someone who's not going to matter, or for you, because it's going to be you and only you? I know it's a little brutal, but only you end on the deathbed looking back on your life of like, did I actually do it the way that I intended to, that I wanted to, did I have fun, did I enjoy myself? And I know it sounds a little brutal, but at the same time, it is brutal.
It is. And nobody gets to the end of their life and goes, oh, I wish I'd built more hours. Well, you know, I wish I'd sat at my desk longer. And it does, it's a really good reframe to put things into perspective for sure.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. 100%. Okay. So let's talk about the good girl. So obviously you work with women to kind of get rid of that good girl. And part of the reason is so that when they get on the deathbed, they're happy with what they created. Sorry, I'm taking it into morbid turn.
I mean, how beautiful would it be to get to the end of this experience and think, wow, that was such an incredible ride. Like, I would recommend that to anyone, to go through this journey of this human experience and dive into it and meet your soul on its deepest level, get to learn and experience all the different emotions and really find purpose and power in your experience on this earth. What an amazing thing to have. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people go through their life, probably not the people who listen to this podcast, but many of us, and you probably know these people, go through life on this autopilot of, you know, get up, go to work, sit at your desk, go home, eat your meal, go to bed. And it's just that on repeat where, I mean, especially in my days as a lawyer, it did get to a point where I felt like I couldn't think about anything unless I was getting paid to think about it, because I was so busy. And it totally took me out of my own human experience and took me into being this robotic mode of that high achieving person of working. And it's not even just work, really, but moving from, okay, what role do I need to play in order to be seen, loved, accepted? You know, how do I be the perfect girlfriend? How do I be the perfect lawyer? How do I be the perfect mentor for this person? Or how do I be the perfect sister, daughter, you name it? And in that good girl conditioning, I lost authenticity. And I say lost authenticity, the way that it kind of works is that rather than discovering and establishing that sense of self, it almost is as if you are living for other people and playing those different roles that suit other people. So instead of getting to a place where you feel really confident in your decisions, you feel very self-assured, you feel like, you know, you're worthy no matter what, you kind of feel a little bit more like jigsaw puzzles that don't quite make up a picture, borrowed from all different parts. And, you know, in my experience and in a lot of my clients' experiences, you get to a place one day and you're like, why am I doing all of this for? I don't think I chose. Did I choose this? Because I don't think any of this feels very aligned. But we're so used to playing those roles that we don't necessarily know how to connect to our authenticity, because we've never practiced that. It's always been, how do I be the thing that this person needs of me? So yeah, working with women to really awaken them into their authenticity, to help them to step into their power so that they can put themselves first, so that they can walk with confidence, so that they can have that unshakable knowing of who they are, what they want to do, where they want to go, and really build a life that excites them and is fulfilling to them. seeing that transition happening, getting a front row seat to that, just blows me away. And it's honestly so much more exciting than writing data protection policies, let me tell you.
Well, I believe that. Oh my gosh. So what is really in the core or at the core of this good girl conditioning? Like, why do we do this?
It often comes from the first 7 years of our life. This is where we make up most of our, I call it like our inner blueprint, our core beliefs on how the world works and what our place is within the world. So we grow up and a lot of that we'll inherit from our primary caregivers. You can also inherit some of this, not just from seeing how other people interact, but also genetically. And so you start to build up this thing of, okay, what is my place in this world? What is my role? What do I need to do? And it comes into safety. Okay, so how do I stay safe? How do I stay within the pack? How do I not get kicked out the pack? Okay, especially at a young age, if you are, you know, under the age of 18 and you get kicked out the pack, you're in trouble, right? Especially when you are under the age of 7, right? And I'll take it back to that. You don't have choices, so you do the things that you need to do inherently to survive. Now, this can show up in a number of different ways, but particularly in the good girl conditioning way, how this manifests is, okay, how do I stay safe? How do I control my environment? How do I get the attention of my parents so that I can be nurtured and cared for? Now, often this happens on such a deep level, people are not aware of it. Often people can hit their 40s, 50s, 60s and still not be aware of it, and then maybe hear something or start to ask those deeper questions, and then they start to see this. It starts to be revealed. But yes, it starts off in those early days, and largely in the first 7 years, because that's when we're in what's called theta brainwave state, where our minds are like sponges and we really, really take in everything. We're more egocentric at that age, which me and my friend were having a bit of a joke the other day about narcissism and saying about children being little narcissists, but they're egocentric because they think everything is about them and for them and because of them. And so in terms of good girl conditioning, if you have experiences where you're like, this is bad, it can become, I am bad. We can internalize it, think it's about me. Or daddy's come home from work and he's upset. That's because I did something wrong or I didn't do something right. So it could be something like that. It could also be experiences of things like feeling a responsibility to even parent your parents. And that can happen at a very young age still. If you feel that need to take care of everyone around you, then you're going to be thinking externally, how do I take care of this situation and take that attention away from yourself?
Ooh, that one hit me deep.
That can resonate. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I wrote actually a couple of notes because you were talking, but what I want to just say right now is, ooh, I was like, no, I'm good. I don't have as much of that good girl conditioning, but that desire, need of, I need to take care of everyone. I need to solve everyone's problems in my family. I need to be the one who figures it out. I'm the one who patches it up when people argue and stuff like that. Like, I feel that still, I don't always act on it because I'm like, it's not my business. They are adults. They can figure it out. But it's so, 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 so deep. And I wanted to also share that the other day I saw a post that said something about what you just said, that, you know, when we are parenting our kids, when we are raising our kids, a lot of times the good girls are praise, but why we call them good girls, it's because they are obedient, right? And then at some point we want those good girls, the obedient good girls, to stand up for themselves and say no when someone like a guy is forcing us to do something we don't want to do. But it's impossible when we have that connection of, well, I need to please everyone to be loved and to be nurtured. So it's just so interesting. And I shared that one of my desires for my daughter is that she's not an obedient daughter, that she's not an obedient girl, but she's one that questions things and does them because that makes sense to her. So I'm really curious how that's gonna go.
I really like that. I was speaking to some friends recently, and they are trying to train this into their daughter as well. So instead of, brushing the teeth, yes or no, well, you need to brush your teeth. So if you say you have to, then it kind of takes away that decision from her. But to let her think through that process and create a decision that's hers. Do you want the red toothbrush today, or do you want the orange toothbrush today? And then that gets her to, and I thought, well, that's really interesting how, I mean, I'm not a parent myself, but sometimes I do wonder how different my world could have been with different types of parenting. And it's really amazing to see more of these things being brought forward now instead of just, oh, well, my parents did it this way and I turned out fine, so I'm going to do that.
But also, if you had different parenting, we wouldn't be here and you can help all of these women to change right now. So let's say that there are some people listening right now and they start recognizing it, like, oh my gosh, I'm such a people pleaser. I'm such a good girl and like quote unquote good girl. And ugh, what do I do? I don't want to do this. I want to change this. I don't know how. I don't know where to start. Where would you tell them to start?
Yeah, I love this question. And one of the tasks that I sometimes give my clients is, and often you'll see with the good girl, people pleaser, they often very much over apologize. They'll apologize just for existing. They'll apologize for everything. So what I say is, okay, how about for just one day, you are not allowed to say the word sorry. You have to say something else instead of that. And it brings that awareness to that. So maybe that changes from you have a disagreement with your friend and they raise that with you and you say, oh, I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah. And you immediately withdraw, take on all the blame of that situation. And there's no sort of compassion there for your own awareness of that situation at the time. So how about from I'm so sorry turns into thank you for telling me that. It's a much more empowered place. And it's a place that honors the other person as well. It's not a place that's mean. I think a lot of people think that when they overcome people pleasing, they're going to turn into assholes. It's not the case. You can be a great person. People pleasing actually is not the thing that makes you a good person. So let's lay that out there first of all. So yeah, a really great way to check in with this is how easy is it for you to take sorry out of your vocabulary? And what would it look like if you were going to say something else?
I freaking love that. That's such a powerful thing. And I think it was a few years ago when I noticed that I would apologize to my husband that I was working. And because my work is on my phone or my work is online, I would like, so sorry, it took me so long to finish what I was doing. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm making money. I'm doing like I'm working. He never apologizes for going to work and going back from work. It would be different if I promised I would be done by a certain time and I'm not, but it's just such a bad, I don't want to say bad habit, but it's just so ingrained. And so I love, 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 love this exercise of awareness of, hey, maybe there's nothing to apologize for.
Well, thank you for that. And if anyone is listening to this and you decide to embody this, please do tag me at Connected Katie. I want to know how you're doing this and some of the things that you've chosen to say from a more empowered place instead of sorry. So yeah, keep them
100%.
coming in.
So, okay, let's say someone is, okay, I am past this. I no longer apologize for working like me, but what would be step number two if they want to turn it up a notch?
So I think with this, there's always phases to this. And as you enter in different parts of your life as well, this is going to show up in different ways. So it's not always necessarily about apologizing or about trying to. We talked about like parenting your parents and things like that. And you'll notice because different things will come up and they may trigger you. And then those triggers are really your treasures. They're your opportunity to show you where the work can be done that can be really, really powerful. So yeah, we start to build into this work on a few levels. And the way that I work with my clients is through education, healing, and integration. So in the education stage, it's more about awareness. So even that task of stopping saying sorry is going to build your awareness. But unless you do some more deeper healing work around that and integration to make that your normal, you'll do it for the day. And then I guarantee you, you'll go back to saying sorry. And this is the thing where sometimes we read self-help books and it goes in and we're like, oh, this is great. This is how I'm going to move going forwards. But especially in those situations and relationships that are a bit more high priority. For example, it's like, well, actually, my mum's known me my whole life. And if I start acting differently with her, so I don't know how that's going to land, but I don't want to rock the boat with my partner. You know, will they embrace this new version of me or whatever it is? When it's a higher priority situation, it can tend to feel a bit more scary and a bit more unknown. And that's when especially we can move into those other parts. So from moving into that education awareness phase of, okay, well, I have this and I would like to change this. And where does this come from? Moving then into healing. Now, I work with my clients on 5 levels when it comes to healing: somatic, emotional, oftentimes, and especially with the good girls, if you're intellectualizers, you'll be like, I want to learn everything about this. Let me read up all about this, but forget to, instead of doing all of that work, forget to actually feel the thing. So emotional level is very, very powerful. Mindset, behavioral as well, because we'll notice these behaviors, we'll notice these patterns coming up. So it's about working on recognizing them, unpicking them, changing them with more empowered behaviors, and the unconscious as well. So like I say, often this stuff sits deeper and deeper and deeper, and there'll be layers to it. So the more that you work into it, the more that you'll be like, oh, I didn't know that that was sitting there, the more you get to grow and expand. So yeah, I think it's a very powerful practice, absolutely starting with awareness. But then if you wanted to take it up a level, I would really encourage you to step into the emotional side of this. So step away from the books, step away from all of this and really sit with yourself. Okay, how does this feel? You know, what does it feel? If you're a good girl, let's say, for example, and you feel like you've upset somebody in some way, and your initial reaction is, I want to send them a long message and over-explain why I behaved the way that I did and what my position is and apologize to them and add a few cute emojis to the end. If you sit there and you're thinking all of this and you realize, okay, I'm doing this thing where I'm feeling a little bit maybe scared that they're not going to love me anymore, or that they're going to reject me, or that I didn't do the role of playing the perfect friend in this situation. Okay, I've noticed that. Now what can I do to sit and feel with this? Okay, what is this feeling? And is it allowed to be there? Quite often the answer will be like, no, shut it down, get rid of it, send that message and send your emotion out that way. Okay, well, what if I gave it permission to be there? How would that feel? And what if instead of holding it in this tiny little space, I was able to allow it to expand and sit there with compassion for it? Because ultimately this feeling is there because it's trying to keep me safe and protect me. So it's got good intentions, poorly executed, but what if I could accept this as part of myself? And once you get that acceptance, oh, thank you. Oh, it's so powerful. But this is the thing, when we work with resistance instead of acceptance, when we resist, we push down, we try and avoid that feeling and push it to one side, we can't really move forward from that. It's just pushing all the stuff into a box and marking it, deal with later. But when we can accept it, then we can move from a place of aligned action. Okay, I accept it. Now, where do I want to go with this?
Oh, I want to add up to it. Like, as you were describing it, literally what we do, a lot of us with emotions, is we take it as a hot potato and, ooh, this feels uncomfortable. Let me throw it there. Let me throw it there. Let me throw it there. Just so I don't have to worry about it. Just so you don't have to deal with it. And it's so, 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 so common. Or also, if not sending the over-explaining text message, one of my coping mechanisms would be, let me just turn on a TV show that I have watched 10 times already, and I'm going to watch it, and then I'm going to pretend like there's nothing on my mind, and I'm going to put my emotions into the show, into the lives of those people that I don't know, that don't exist, rather than dealing with my own, because that makes me feel more safe, that makes me feel more comfortable, but it doesn't solve anything. So yeah, 100% related to this.
Yeah. It's very common, actually, in the way that we learn how to soothe ourselves. A lot of us were brought up not learning how to embrace our emotions. So it's like, okay, well, where can I put that? What can I do? And that can show up, yeah, sometimes in, binge watching Netflix, for example, or having something on that is comforting because it's familiar and it takes us out of this unknown, scary, I don't know what's going to happen with this situation. Let me grab onto some familiarity. So yes, it could be something like you're watching an episode of Friends that you've seen a million times or whatever.
Well,
But it
I
can
will keep
more
doing that
often
though.
come up.
I'll definitely rewatch Friends over and over again.
Yeah, I'm not giving that one up anytime soon. And some of that, you can look into that and think, well, actually, do I like this behavior? Do I want to change it? Maybe you're like, oh, this behavior feels okay, but maybe your behavior isn't doing that. Maybe your behavior is binge and overeating, for example. Maybe your behavior is self-harm, or you want to pick all the spots on your skin because you feel like you want to get something out and you don't know how to get it out, so you start picking at yourself or doing these things. Maybe pulling your hair out is quite common as well. Binge eating is sort of, I don't know what to do, this emotion that's trying to come out, I push it back down with some food. And these patterns and these behaviors, it could be something like that, binge spending, any kind of excessive or binge behavior that you're noticing is most likely linked to some under feeling of emotion. And so often people will come to do the work around overcoming the good girl conditioning, awakening into their authenticity, and realizing how much of the things that they're struggling with are kind of all fueled by the same root causes. And when they can work on that, and not only on a conceptual level of like, well, I've read loads of books on this, why isn't this working? But then to go deeper into the healing work and the integration so you can live, you can embody it. And I'm like, wow, actually, I'm not doing this behavior anymore. I'm able to move past that. It's,
Yeah.
yeah, it's so powerful.
Yeah. If the change in the world was dependent only on how many books we read, we would all be completely different, but it's that integration. And as we were talking, I could just see this visual of a domino, right? Like when we really get to that root cause and we shift that and we change that, we heal that, then the dominoes can fall perfectly into place. Or if we don't, they keep falling into place, not the way that we want them.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds so simple, but it takes the work, and I think that's the thing, being empowered and being ready to step into, okay, I'm not going to be the victim in this anymore. I'm not going to sit here feeling exhausted, taken advantage of by my friends, feeling like I'm doing all the work and overgiving and no one's reciprocating, or, oh, I have to do everything in my family, all this stuff. From doing all of that and carrying all of that as very much the victim state, then being like, actually, I'm ready to choose a different reality and I'm ready to do the work. And it's deep and it changes things, because when you do that, then you can't move forward as the same person. You have to realize there's parts of you that you need to let go in order to move forward. And some people around you are going to celebrate that and love seeing you step into your power and really embrace that. And other people are not necessarily going to like that. They're going to be
Yeah.
like, oh, where's the girl who pays for coffee every time we go out? Where's she gone? I liked her. Or where's the girl who always plans a restaurant and plans the group activities for all of our friends to get together? Oh, I can't be bothered to do that now. And so it's very interesting how you do this work, and it really does allow you to grow and expand in so many ways. It does change things too. So as I
Yeah.
was saying earlier about, would you, if you did have a different childhood, what your life would be like, it's about accepting all of that as part of the journey, as part of the expansion, and embracing all sides of that. If you are ready and open to finding out who you really are and
Yeah.
being able to confidently share that with the world.
And you said it's, I don't remember if you said it's simple or it's not simple, but in a way it's simple, but it's hard to do the work, right? Because it doesn't happen as fast as just like flicking that one domino. Because it takes that daily micro changes, micro shifts. And that's where we can get really impatient and annoyed, kind of like when you start going to the gym and you're like, wait a minute, I've been going here 3 times a week for 2 weeks and still no abs. And it can be frustrating when we put so much effort into something. But what I always think of is, well, what's harder, to be going through these changes and putting the work in or staying the same? And I feel like this is what a lot of people don't think about all that much until they get to that breaking point, right? When something, we get really shaken up and then we're like, okay, I have to change. But we don't have to get to the breaking point. We can just look at, what is it going to cost me if I stay the same? And then when we do that, I feel like hiring a coach, hiring a mentor, jumping all the way in feels like the easiest and most logical option ever.
Yeah, like choose your hard, right? It's hard to stay stuck in a place where you feel overgiving, burnt out, taken advantage of. You're realizing the relationships around you are not really as empowering and expansive as you were hoping that they would be. And you want to have more. Like, that's hard, being in that place of waking up miserable with your work, with your life or whatever, and thinking, who am I suffering for? As I was. And it's hard to also do the work, but it's a journey so worth taking.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Katie, for everything that you shared. All of this was such a gold. And I know that people are already obsessed with you and want to know more of you and want to know more. So where can they find you? What's your favorite place to hang out on the internet?
Absolutely. So Instagram is my internet home, and you can find me at ConnectedKatie. That's Katie with IE.
Perfect. We're going to definitely link it below in the show notes as well, but I love Instagram as well. Before we go, I have only two more questions that I want to ask you. And one of them is there anything we didn't address that you would really love to share with our listeners today? With all the good girls.
I would love the good girls to really take a moment of reflection on asking themselves about their behaviors. Who is this good for? And if the answer isn't you, then take a moment with that. Because being good, being obedient, being easily manipulated, at times being overgiving, you're not feeling good. Maybe it's time to ditch that label. And that doesn't mean that you have to become a bad bitch.
I literally wrote a note here. It's just not being a good girl does not mean that you would be a bad girl or a bad bitch. So yes, 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 yes. I love that. Thank you so much for that. And then my question that I ask every single person who comes on the podcast is, what does a dream life look like to you?
I love this question. A dream life is one of authenticity. It is one of the most powerful things that I have cultivated and I'm still cultivating. I think for as long as I'm in this human experience, I still plan on learning and growing and finding those deeper layers to myself. But I think if you are moving in alignment with your values, with your integrity and with your authenticity, you can't be going too far wrong.
I love that. Oh, that just feels so peaceful. I don't know, guys, if you felt it, if you heard it, but to me, just that vision, it's like massage for the brain and for the soul. So thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you so much for being here and sharing all of this gold. Obviously, all of the links, how to find you and where people can stalk you and hire you and all of that stuff are going to be in the show notes. But thank you so much for your time. This was so amazing.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Kate. I do have a program coming up soon if people are interested in diving deeper into this work. It's starting at the beginning of April and it is called Unshakable You. It's all about unlearning good girl conditioning and stepping into empowered authenticity. So if you're curious, check out my Instagram page and feel free to drop me a DM.
Perfect. And if or when we have a link, I'm going to make sure that it's also linked in the description below so people can just like go check it out right away there. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'll talk to you later. Bye. Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. If you absolutely loved it, please let me know by leaving a short review here on the podcast app and take a screenshot of the episode and tag me on your Instagram stories at @xokdecker so that I can keep your favorite topics coming. And until next time, let's create your best life.